I'm all alone and fancy free.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We're going to talk about the fox, the environmental activist, the guy we all know and love. There's going to be a documentary coming out on the fox soon. We're going to talk about that in a minute. We have our panel, one of my dearest friends, guy I've known longer than dirt, Steve Lord, writer for the Aurora Beacon News.
Hi.
Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
I can't look at Steve and not smile. Susan Ward, Trust Trail.
Hi, everybody.
Never met you, but I knew your dad. We'll get into Charlie a little bit. Matt, I know you.
Yep.
We've done a little bit on the documentary together.
Yep.
And Jim Spring and Nancy Spring Epley, niece and nephew of Jim Phillips, who was the fox.
You got it.
So this is a tremendous story. It's a great idea for documentary. I want to start with Steve because we were introduced to this fox when we were in high school.
Yes.
In Naperville Central. Yeah. We were on the school newspaper, Smoke Signals.
Because
they were the Redskins.
Yeah. Neither name would be applicable today.
And the fox, so the fox calls me with this like weird voice. And you know what he did? I was going through some of my, I'd forgotten a lot of this stuff. But he networked with high school students. He networked with Proviso East and I think Barrington or something. But pick up the story. So he called us, and we became like his guerrilla.
You were going to do, I believe you wrote a story on him.
Yeah.
And what I always remember was he talked to us through one of those harmonizers.
Right.
So he sounded like this.
You know, it sounded funny. And so that I presumably wouldn't identify him. And what happened, it started as a story, and then we sort of said we'd help him with things. And he asked us, does your school have garbage cans, you know, around the campus outside? And we said, no, it doesn't. He goes, well, I'll bring you guys some. So we got there at like 6 in the morning before school started one more day. And he dropped off. We thought there were going to be these little garbage refuse cans. He dropped off these, about 13 or 14 of these huge industrial
barrels.
And
we never saw him. I don't know.
No,
they were just dropped off somewhere.
They were just there.
Yeah, right.
He was sitting like at the front of the school.
Yeah.
And they're like these giant barrels, and they were painted green. And then he had just, it wasn't even stenciled. He just kind of hand-painted in white on there, the fox, or he had a fox head on some, you know. So we're looking at, oh, my, what are we going to do? So we put a few around campus, as many as we could, and we still had a few left over. So we actually rolled them into downtown Naperville and put them around.
If we'd done that today, we'd been thrown in jail.
Yeah. And we didn't, you know, they, oddly enough, this was the early 70s, and downtown Naperville did not have trash receptacles around town. So we put them there, and a couple days later when the Naperville Sun came out, huge headlines, the fox strikes in downtown Naperville, you know, environmental crusader. And we were kind of looking at each other going, we might be in some trouble here. But the city collected those eventually and took them up, but the city did put receptacles out. So in a weird way, that was responsible for them putting out trash receptacles in downtown Naperville for the first time.
We were the Joe Napers of the environmental movement. So then you fast forward to our lives at the Beacon News. I worked at the Beacon News. You worked at the Beacon News. And we worked with Charlie Ward.
Mm-hmm. My dad.
So your dad. So Susan, now Charlie Ward befriended the fox. He was his confidant.
He was his confidant. Yeah, a lot of journalists, you know, wrote about him, but I don't think a lot of people knew who he was. My dad was one of those people who knew who he was, and he never would tell any of us who he was. And I did talk to him on the phone once, and he called for my dad, and he said,
did he have that funny thing that Steve was talking about?
No. he didn't have the harmonizer.
Yeah.
But he asked for my dad, and I said, when he wasn't home, could I take a message? And I ended up filling two legal pad pages full of the notes. And when we got finished, he said, now you can bill your dad for your secretarial services. And I didn't get any money from dad.
Wow.
Did that shock you?
We could do a whole show on Charlie. But, Steve, did you talk to Charlie at all about the fox? Did you guys?
Yeah. As I was starting to write things, people would tell me, well, why don't you talk to, well, you got your own reporter there who knows who the fox is. And I'd say, who? And they'd say, Charlie Ward. And I'd say, really? So, of course, I'd try to get Charlie to tell me. And he never told me. And he was always very.
He never told me either.
You know,
and I begged him.
Yeah, he would try to lead me on to somebody else and say, or you know, or sometimes with your dad, I'd ask him about it and he'd just go, I don't know. I can't be bothered with that right now. And you know, sometimes like that. So it would just be he would never tell me. I kind of discovered it later on, but I never knew for absolute sure.
Right, I kind
of figured it out after I'd been around long enough. But oddly enough, I dealt with the Fox as Jim Phillips, as his real person, working for the King County Environmental Department. And I was joking with you, I think, beforehand. I even found an article that the Beacon wrote that about one of the something the Fox did in the 80s, in the early 80s. This reporter talked, like, obviously on the phone to the Fox, you know, mm-hmm. not knowing who he was, and then later called Jim Phillips at King County for a comment in the same article. And when I read that, I just started laughing because he's saying things like, yeah, well, he's right about that. He should do something.
So Jim and Nancy, I mean, yes. I covered when he passed away. He died. Jim Phillips died in October 2001, yep. age right. of 70. I for the reader, I covered the memorial service out there at the Fox. His ashes were put in the Fox River.
They right? were.
Yes. Yeah.
Not all of them. We have some of them.
You have some. never married. Never had kids. Right.
Nope.
So tell us a little bit about him. What you knew about him.
He was a perennial storyteller. A BS artist. We were talking.
No.
Well,
embellishment.
Okay. Embellishment.
It was embellishment.
Okay. We were talking in the green room about he was always telling people that the Fox was Dick Young. He's just fobbing that line off on everybody he could. And I remember meeting. I ended up working for Dick Young later myself. I took my uncle's position at the environmental department. And I remember meeting Dick when I was like in sixth grade. He came over to get some asparagus at Grandma's. And when he left, Uncle Jim went. He says, "You know who that is? No, that's the Fox." And I didn't know. Oh, boy, that's really cool. And then, and Matt knows this one.
Yep.
A couple years later, I end up interviewing the Fox inadvertently. I wasn't on the list, and I found out who the Fox was because I was one of the 7th and 8th graders that got to interview the Fox over the phone.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't on, my name wasn't on the list, so my uncle didn't know that I was going to be asking a question, and I didn't know it was my uncle. And I get on the phone, and they say, well, the first question comes from Jim Spring. I start to ask the question, and he answers, and I immediately go, wait. Oh no! That's my uncle. I didn't give him up. I felt very, you know, very spy worthy there. I didn't divulge anything. And I came home and he was having coffee with Mom. And I walk in. And he says, "I guess you had a really interesting conversation today, didn't you?" Oh my gosh, you lied all these years. And yeah, he admitted that he had been lying to me all those years.
Besides the Fox persona, though, he was just an all around cool guy. He was the cool uncle. He would take us on walks around the property where he did his first raid around the their family home was around the Armadale plant, and that's where the whole thing started. And that was our stomping grounds about. From the time we were little kids. He would take us out night walks, day walks. It was
He loved canoeing, didn't he?
Loved oh,
yeah.
It.
Yeah,
he loved
yeah.
It.
He got all canoed the Mississippi that. River, did he?
Yeah,
he did.
As part of that Marquette Joliet expedition in 73.
Oh, yeah.
He went all the way down to the Arkansas River, turned around, came all the way back.
I mean, and stuff I'd written about him, he was born in Chicago, but you mentioned the asparagus. Mm-hmm. In 1933, moved to Montgomery when his father purchased the parents' 23-acre asparagus farm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in the family for over 100 years.
Wasn't that something?
Yeah. Right.
Then he got a biology degree at NIU in 1959.
Yes, he did.
Yep.
For all you, how hard was it for him to keep it anonymous?
It was kind of an open secret, I guess.
Yeah. Once we found out we were all involved, I mean, you were painting signs with him and all sorts of stuff. So that's...
When you were officially told it was pretty cool, and that meant you officially could go on raids. And we all, I think, started about the age of 14 or 15 doing various things for him, whether it was a sticker campaign or
We did that.
Piece of garbage.
Let's
getaway
check
car.
The statute of limitations before we go much further.
yeah, what were the
rules?
I was a child.
I think he's okay. Oh, yeah, you guys
doing.
Might be.
There's a point at which you realize, well, now, wait a minute. I'm over 18. I know what I can't honestly say, well, Uncle Jim said it was okay. You know, there's a point where you realize, well, you're an adult. You'll go to jail just like everybody else will, so you got to pay attention.
Yeah, give me. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that one thing that. Everyone in the Fox's family, everyone in Jim's family, these two included, wanted to make sure that I knew for some reason was that Jim Phillips, the Fox, was the first person to tell him a dirty joke.
Yeah.
Y'all learned your first dirty jokes from
that
Jim.
That was true. That was true.
That's the type of person he was, apparently.
Good-naturedly, though.
Good-naturedly. Oh, yeah.
He was teaching. Now, what I heard in 1968, he was teaching eighth graders who, and he was in Oak Lawn.
Yes,
and they were wondering
was.
Why he was in 1968. They were wondering why he was driving his car all the way to Oak Lawn and right. polluting. And he said, "Well, you got a problem with it. You know, just go ahead and put stuff on my car, put signs on my car." And that's kind of how the whole thing started.
And they did.
Yeah, they went out and painted out and painted the truck with pollution. Models. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a break for the news. We're going to talk about the documentary after this on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal, and we're going to talk about the story of the fox, the environmentalist, the fighter of all good things, against all good things. We got Jim Spring, Nancy Spring Epley, niece and nephew of the fox. We got my dear friend, Aurora Beacon News reporter Steve Lord, covered the fox.
Yes.
And Susan Ward, Trees Trail, poet, writer, father, was Charlie Ward, confidant of the fox. And Matt Paniski. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great.
You're the guy doing the documentary.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so tell us about the documentary, the story of the fox.
What else is there to say? It's the story of Jim Phillips, who we've all been talking about, so I assume you know who we're talking about when I say the fox. I got involved in this project several years ago when I was actually a student. I was doing a documentary about real-life superheroes, and that's when I met my friend T. Krolos, who's a journalist up in Milwaukee. And he told me, well, there's this guy who lives right in your neck of the woods. And I'm like, really? Yeah, it was back in the 1960s. He was called the Fox. And when I was told about what he did along the Fox River, that just blew my mind because I spent summers, not entire summers, obviously, along the Fox River, going to the Fox Valley Folk Music Festival. So this was really, really close to me in a lot of ways, and I just had to do more. So I spent as much time researching this as possible, and I built up my own little Fox archive. And a few years later, I've graduated from school, and I've been putting this documentary together over
the last few
years.
Yeah, when did you start?
In earnest, probably about 2-3 years ago. But I've been archiving information for a little bit longer than that, probably like 5 or 6.
And when will it come out, and how can people support it?
Well, right now we're working on a rough cut. We're still not finished filming. We got a few more interviews scheduled in a few days on the Fox River, but we have enough to start putting together our rough cut, and we'll probably be premiering it sometime this summer. But for right now, you could go to www.facebook.com/thestoryofthefox, and you will see we have two things up there. We have a teaser trailer, and we also have an Indiegogo campaign. Indiegogo, you just click on the link to Indiegogo, and you can help us raise the money needed to finish the film.
I gave you my Fox comic book that I never threw out.
Yes. It was
printed on recycled paper.
Of course.
Yes, you know? One of the things we're doing is we tracked down the writer of that comic, and he has given us permission to actually print the comic again and give it exclusively as a perk for donating to the campaign.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So we can only print out so many, and part of the terms was that in addition to the print, we would make the digital version of the comic available to everyone after the film is completed. But the only way to get a printed copy is going to be through the campaign. And the only way to get a digital copy in the meantime is going to be through the campaign.
Very good. Now, we were talking during the break, and when Steve and I were at Naperville Central and we were on the school paper, it was, you know, Mike Royko had become an ally of his. I think he even took him on one of his visits to U.S. Steel or something. But it was a big deal for us as aspiring journalists, Steve, to be in the same minor league orbit as Royko was. It was a big deal when the Fox approached us.
Yeah, it was. And we talked about the funeral for the Fox.
Yeah, we did a funeral for the Fox. Talk about that.
That was in Carpentersville. I can't. We took something. It was a
well, you know, I just found it. My parents' attic. It was a cross we made.
A cross. Yeah, big cross. Yeah. And yeah, we took it. I remember it was a big. A lot of people showed up for that. We marched along the riverfront, and it got a lot of attention. You know, so and, yeah, it was a big deal for us to, like you say, to be able to help and write about who was becoming a national figure.
Yeah,
which he was by then.
And it's like these kids we just had on from Student Express. I mean, for us to be writing about environmental issues at Smoke Signals was kind of off the grid a little bit. You know what I mean? For yeah, a school, for a school newspaper,
it was. You know,
we weren't writing about homecoming and
right. It probably shouldn't be. You know, kids probably should be writing about those things. Yeah. I think it's good if they do. And I think we tried to because that was the times that we were in. Yeah. These were all the big issues that were going on at the time. And you know, you're in the times that you're in, and that's what we did. We reflected that, and those were all the things we talked about and were worried about. So we wanted to write about it on as much as we could or on a local level.
Susan, you grew up right by the river, right?
I did, two blocks away, right in Batavia.
In Batavia,
Illinois. I love the river. It was really not very safe to, you know, swim in or...
It's much better now.
It's much better now, oh, yeah, because of the Jim Phelps.
Thanks. And, yep.
And my dad, too, helping out by being his mouthpiece. And
how was that connection made? Did Jim find your dad, or did your dad find Jim?
You know, my dad would never tell me that.
Yeah, he never even told you that.
I don't know. Uh-huh. I was asking Steve that at the library the other day, and I think he just contacted him, mm-hmm, you know, knowing that he was a trustworthy
that
person.
Our Uncle Jim really trusted Chuck Ward. We, as a family, often heard about him as
That's
the one
so
that
awesome.
Was writing the pieces and the one that he trusted with the information on a local level. I know Royko was obviously on a national level, but the Beacon, which has, you know, been around forever and been a part of our family forever, that's where he went to get the information disseminated locally. And he really liked the way your dad wrote, and mm-hmm, he liked what he had to say.
He was kind of to the point person.
That's yeah, right. I mean, I remember that about him. Yeah. I mean, his writing was that way, too. Very
exactly,
much to the
yeah,
point.
He was very to the point.
Steve wrote a wonderful obituary on your father.
Yeah, he did.
For the Beacon.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it mentioned, one of the things it mentioned in there was that Charlie took up the case of a guy who was, you know, it was being kind of jerked around by the judicial system. And a guy that both Dave and I worked with, when he was first at the Beacon, he asked Charlie, he says, why are you writing so much about this guy? You know, he's mm-hmm, just kind of a big nothing guy. Why are you helping this guy so much? And Charlie just said, well, if I don't, who will? And
yeah,
that's kind of
that
was the way he looked at nice things. He was key. He,
I have
he,
that right here.
Yeah.
I love that article so much because I learned some things about my dad that I never knew just, you know, because of the professional side of him. And it just wonderful. Is it now is a good
well,
time?
Well, I want to say, since we're sitting here in this building, I didn't know this until I read Steve's thing that you sent to me. Was that he started at the Tribune. He was doing research for Colonel McCormick's speeches.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah.
Man.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I was at that lunch where the mustard, it was a great Charlie
the mustard,
moment.
I love that.
We were Barefoot Charlie's in downtown Aurora, and the mustard all exploded, and everybody cleaned everything up. They ignored Charlie.
Except Charlie. Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, he wasn't the sharpest dresser. I mean, he dressed very flamboyantly or just mismatched. That was kind of his.
Yeah,
when he retired, they did a caricature of him with a strange colored tie. And
it could have been Uncle Jim, too.
I was not sure who you were talking about.
They
were kind of eccentric
thing
at the end.
That may have been the initial attraction there. Uncle Jim wasn't exactly a fashion player.
So, Susan, you're a poet, writer, adjunct English professor.
That's correct, yeah.
And how long have you been doing that?
About 8 years, I want to say, yeah. Before that, I worked for the Illinois Employment Training Centers, training people on how to get jobs and that sort of thing. So, but I've been teaching English, you know, college writing and that sort of thing.
So I did really like your pieces, so
Thank you.
Want to share a couple with the listeners. So what are you going to read now?
I'm going to read The Hero and Chuck. Okay. I know you knew him as Charlie.
Yeah.
But
okay.
The infamous Fox, local legend, river hero. Chuck, diligent, self-taught writer, intellectual. The Fox, a secret held by few. Chuck, dreamer of authorial fame. The Fox, secretly masked, the cause grew like Midwestern corn. Chuck, a beat writer's voice, black turtleneck and beret. The Fox's children, idealistic seventh grade science students. Chuck's children lulled to sleep by the tapping sounds of his Smith Corona. The suspicious person wore a handkerchief across his face, said police. Chuck's words, river flowed, a movement underway. The Fox dumped 50 pounds of sewage on U.S. Steel's snow-white rug. Chuck's source protected, his silence a medal of honor. Inspired by the rebellious culture of the 1960s, the Fox and Chuck worked together for many years in protest of the offensive, irresponsible treatment of our precious natural resource, the Fox River.
Well done.
That great. That's very, 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 very good. Can we talk about, I want to, you know, the Armor Dial thing is probably his hallmark work.
Right. It was a catalyst for everything.
Yeah, talk about the Armor Dial, well, the whole panel.
That started initially, and my brother John and I were talking about this a while ago, and John said that when he first heard about it, it was because Uncle Jim was just mad. It was that simple. It was just good old-fashioned anger. He's going for a walk, sees little ducklings that are drowned basically in soap curds.
Yeah.
And what era? Like, set this up. When was this?
It would have been late 60s, and it's...
I heard the creek
called Gillette Creek. I heard it called Little Creek. I heard all sorts of terms for it. We called it Gillette Creek when I was a kid. But
the property was less than a mile from Grandma's house.
And it was a tributary.
Family stomping grounds. We were all hiking
around
there.
And they were just dumping right into the creek. And obviously, the creek was making its way to the river. And something inside just snapped. Like, I've had enough. You know, this is... I'm supposed to be able to go for a walk alongside of a creek and not see this. This is ridiculous. And like you said, it's a product of the 60s. There's, you know, there are rebellions.
Very
all
socially
sorts of,
active time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are things like that happening all over. And it became kind of a, well, why not this? You know, the environment needs just as much protection. You mentioned your dad protecting this man. Why would he continue to fight? Well, nobody was speaking for the environment.
Yeah.
And he made a comment during the interview I had with him when I was in seventh grade. He made a comment about how he basically lost faith in the adults. And so he is turning over to us. As
yeah,
kids.
Maybe that's why he was, yeah.
I think
well,
so.
He's going he was to the very kids. Excited about middle school and high school kids getting into this.
Yeah, that's...
And it was, I remember when I went on to work for the environmental department, then there was a comment that he made about how if somebody commits a crime, they're under investigation until we figure out what happened. And he said, polluters just trash the environment, and we have to give them notice when we're going to come in. It's
this was pre-legislation. None of this had
been pre-clean water.
Pre-clean water act.
Yeah, right.
Pre-clean air act. This was kind of a stepping stone of what became legislation. Mm-hmm. But he's right. It just took so long at the time to get anything done, and he did snap. I think that's a good word.
He wasn't going to wait.
Oh yeah.
No,
and
he couldn't.
And part of it wasn't just like just for context, what he did when he saw the dogs is he got mad and clogged their drain pipe so that it would back up into their plant. Mm-hmm. So he was clogging their drain pipe, and this was originally just going to be one thing. He was mad, but he did not intend to become the Fox like this.
No.
It wasn't until they had completely ignored what he had done that he decided, I'm going to do it again. Mm-hmm. And after a while, he just left a sign because they weren't going to get it any other way. He had to literally spell it out, and that's when he took up the name The Fox. He left a sign, and he wrote The Fox on it as if the river itself was fighting back.
Right. And that's when he got in touch, the connection between he and Chuck Ward. He needed press to tell the story. I mean, you can complain to your friends, and we all know where that goes. If you want the story told, you need someone to tell the story. If you're going to do something anonymously, you need a contact.
And if you're going to get a corporation to pay attention, then press is the weapon to use because it gets them where they hurt.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to take a break for some spots, and we'll be back with more Nocturnal Journal after this. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. We're paying tribute to the environmentalist Jim Phillips, a.k.a. The Fox. And it's what goes around. I mean, Nancy Spring Epley, you teach science.
I do. You were asking about his role with us kids as our uncle, but it was also kind of inspirational as we were steeped in this care and stewardship of the environment as kids, to the point where I went ahead and got my master's in environmental education. And I teach out in Naperville at
something?
Hill Middle School. Yeah, so it's kind of paying it forward. My kids in my class, I've been out there for 26 years teaching this to my kids. And this is kind of where it started in our home, and I'm hoping to inspire my kids to take it out there.
Do your students know the story? Do they
actually? It's a very weird thing. The seventh graders in my school right now are doing one of their projects in their language arts class on people who wear masks, and it's whether it's a literal mask or a figurative mask. And they ran across this particular story last week and tied me to the story, and they came running into my class like, is this your uncle?
Wow. Wow. Wow.
So yeah, yep. So it is.
So they can listen to this podcast when it comes out. It'll be a good reference for them. Yeah, yep. That's good. We were talking during the break about, for the whole panel, about close calls. Were there any times you came close to getting unmasked?
Oh, yeah.
Matt?
Mm-hmm. The most famous thing that, like, a lot of, whenever I ask people that question, because that's a question I ask everyone I interview, is Daley Plaza. He actually, on the Picasso sculpture, he put a huge political cartoon on there because Daley was trying to put an airport in Lake Michigan. And he put this political cartoon right onto Picasso. And at that point, all the security guards there just sort of converged on him. And he's trying to move as fast as he can. And while he's doing that, trying to make his way to the getaway car, he almost gets hit by a bus.
Wow. He was such an agile man.
Oh, yeah. Clearly.
And delicate.
Delicate, yes.
Steve, did you talk to him much in later years at the Beacon?
Well, not so much in later years, but I talked to him a lot. You know, I worked basically. He was a source of mine in the environmental department at Kane County. I wrote a series in the mid-'80s on the river, and the idea was how much better it had gotten at the time. And I remember tramping along the riverbanks with him and Dick Young, and they just, you know, they were giving me, showing me, here's certain ways we know it's getting better, certain keys that, you know, certain plants are coming back. Certain kinds of wildlife or you know, are around the river again. And ended up to be a real good series, and they were real helpful with it. And, of course, I didn't know he was the fox at the time. And I was telling them, I can remember having conversations with the both of them, Dick Young and Jim Phillips, and saying, talking about, you know, they tell me you're the fox. I'd say that to Dick Young, and he'd just laugh, and Jim would always go, yeah, he is. Yeah. And, you know, and but I kind of had this feeling of somebody's pulling my leg here on something. I don't know what. So I never felt like I really knew that, but I'd walk away going, I'll bet one of those guys.
They did that the whole time. They went back and forth like that the whole time.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, what a story.
Everyone always said, no, everyone tells me that when they would meet Jim, he would introduce whoever was standing next to him, like, so have you met this guy? He's the fox. You've met Dick Young? He's the fox. Have you met Reed Lewis? He's the fox.
Fox. Yeah, right.
His argument was always going to be that he would get caught the moment society decided he'd gone too far.
Yes.
So he always kept as his benchmark, as kind of the scope of this was, I'm doing something right, because there's enough people who really do know who I am that if I overstep my bounds, I'm in trouble.
They'll call on it.
That was his judgment.
Oh, yeah.
That's how he used it.
So before we wrap it up, Matt, give the details how people can get behind the documentary. It's called The Story of the Fox.
Yes, and you can go to our Facebook page. Just search facebook.com/storyofthefox, and you will see our trailer, and you will see our Indiegogo link. Or you could search Indiegogo for The Story of the Fox, and you can donate. We have several wonderful rewards you can choose from. You can get The Story of the Fox comic book. You'll get a digital download of the film. Yeah, that's about it. Indiegogo.com or through our Facebook page.
Well, good luck. It's a story that really, really needs to be told. Was there, when I wrote about him last, there was talk about a monument or some type of
memorial? Yeah, it's in us.
Has that been put up?
Yeah,
there is a
Violet Patch Park.
Violet Patch Park?
East side of the Fox River, just north of Oswego.
There is.
On a bike path.
And what is it? Was it a stat?
It's got a stone carving with a fox letter, you know, the word fox with a fox head in it and a picture of Uncle Jim there. And
there's like a three-panel storyboard with a little bit of
background. That's great. Sweet. That's really,
cool.
really.
One of the nice things about it is that you can get to it from the river. You can walk to it. You can get to it, you know.
The bike path.
You can drive to it, too, but you can do it on the paths and everything. That was kind of why the location was chosen. And a guy that was behind it, we should mention real quick, another good friend of the fox from the press was Roger Mateel,
in
Kendall County. He helped them a lot, and he was a big supporter.
In my my piece for the reader, and then we're going to close it out with a poem from Susan, but Dick Young visited Jim, it says here. This is a piece I wrote on the night he died.
Yeah,
he said a nurse asked whether he could feed Mr. Phillips, and he wouldn't eat, Young told me. He asked me, we were doing the right things, weren't we? I'm worried. And then Dick told him, I'm sure you did the right thing, Jim. Pretty strong stuff. He made a difference.
Yeah,
that's all we can
definitely
do in this world is make a difference.
Darn right.
So, So thank you all for coming in. This is great. This is great radio.
Thank you.
So Susan, I love your poem. So we're going to close it out. Tell us, set this poem up. And
this poem is about the river, and it's how much it meant to me as I was growing up, and it's about my childhood and my dad. Called Currents. My river calls me. Fog lifts with the growing sun. Like the 88 steps leading to my favorite childhood place, cement chips with impermanence. Complicated fathers, lovely mothers, disturbed brothers, animated sisters, our river rock. The past is present. These bricks made me. This wall formed me. This city lives inside my wistful heart. My river calls me home. No matter where my body travels, my soul returns, moved by the undertow of longing.